There are countless decisions parents make that can make a big difference in the lives of their children, some bigger than others, like making a decision on a person to share the parenting load. We'll go beyond simple daycare in this discussion and talk about choosing a nanny, truly a parenting partner. Today's guest is the author of a book on the subject, Secrets of the Nanny Whisperer, a practical guide for finding and achieving the gold standard of care for your child. The author is Tammy Gold, who's a licensed therapist and parenting coach. She's contributed to the New York Times, the Huffington Post, and several broadcast outlets. Secrets of the Nanny Whisperer is her first book. Tammy, thanks so much for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thank you for having me.
I'm intrigued by your stories of working with at-risk kids at schools in New Jersey. What did you find there? What kinds of stories did you hear from them?
Oh, wow. I found a lot. How I came to this place of looking at childcare was really such an organic experience. When I worked with the school, I really saw the direct link of ineffective parenting and caregiving and what can happen in later in life. I'm at school at Columbia. I've been very interested in attachment theory, which is basically how if the caregiver is responsive, the children are most emotionally healthy. And what I saw with these children were that they didn't have the attachments from caregivers early on, whether it was their mother or father or grandparents, and they really had a lot of emotional problems later in life, trust issues, anger issues, safety, security issues that presented themselves in all facets of their life. And it was hard for them even to focus on school because they were distracted by the chaos at home and kind of the anger and sadness within them.
Did it even always rise to the level of abuse and neglect, or was it simply that they had not just didn't have good nurturing environments around them?
All of the above. So there was an abuse, there was neglect, there was just a non-level of importance focused on really responding to the needs of young children. And young children, until the age of five, that's when the brain grows and cognitive development happens when people respond to those needs, when they have interactions, when they talk and babble at their children who babble back and who help them through each developmental stage. And, you know, it wasn't even as extreme as, you know, neglect and abuse in all areas. Some of it was just very poor caregiving and inattention to the children, and that really presented itself later in life.
What was the pathway from working with those kids to the nanny whisperer?
So I gave birth to my own child when I was working at the school, and she suffered from terrible colic and reflux. I didn't know it at the time. And I realized that I was kind of having a parallel process to these mothers. It didn't matter, you know, rich or poor, educated or non-educated. Parenting is the great equalizer. And when your child is in distress, it doesn't matter what you have. You just feel helpless that you can't help them. So I did a lot of medical research. I figured out that she had reflux. I got her a special compounded medicine. I spoke to universities. I really dug in and advocated for her care, and she really changed dramatically. And I realized, wow, there's really a lack of guidance and support for parents in America. There are a lot of focus on the physicals, what to do in the birthing process, but post-care, there's not someone that can come in and just help you. Like, you know, if your computer is broken, you can get someone to help you with that. But if you're having a trouble with your child, no one can come in and kind of coach you through it. So I got certified in coaching, where I was able to do a little bit more talking and guiding as opposed to more listening as a therapist, and started what I believed was missing out there, which is in-home support or via phone support for parents.
Something that goes beyond Dr. Spock's baby book those sorts
exactly.
of resources.
Mm-hmm. And then childcare presented itself a lot in my practice. Issues of I don't know which childcare to choose. These daycare centers aren't working. This nanny relationship is so stressful, it's causing problems for the whole family. And as a therapist, I became fascinated by the parent-nanny relationship. It is so complex because it's so personal yet so professional. And there's no rule book or governing body in the nanny world. There's no, there's no white way to do things. So you're kind of left to your own devices in your home. And so I helped people kind of sort through their issues, no different than I would help them with teens or a toddler tantrums. I helped them through this aspect of parenting, which related to childcare.
And so, Tammy, how did you find Maria, your own nanny, and really how does any parent begin the search for good child care?
Well, I was lucky because Maria was older, and she was the nanny of one of my dear friends who was a nanny there for 10 years and had essentially helped raise that friend's sister and then still kept in touch with Maria, you know, 20 years later. So I had a really rock solid reference. But I approached the assessment area different than most people did, and that's why I began writing the book. I realized that a lot of parents don't know how to assess their needs. They don't understand what they need as a parent. They're just getting used to a parent, so it's hard for them to even understand how someone else should parent their child. And they weren't understand what children need at each developmental stage. So I kind of used that to figure out, yes, this person can really match my needs as a mother and our needs as a family, and most importantly, what my infant needed during those times that I was going to be with my clients. And that kind of translated itself into the process I use with clients and the process I use in the book.
How old was your child when you brought Maria in?
Really young, I think 2 months.
Okay, wow, really, really young then. Okay.
I was still at the school, and I had to go back after 3 months. That was, you know, what was my allotted leave time.
All right, we have a lot more to talk about with Tammy Gold. She, again, is a licensed therapist and parenting coach and the nanny whisperer. I'm surprised you haven't trademarked the term, or maybe you have by now, but her book is Secrets of the Nanny Whisperer, A Practical Guide for Finding and Achieving the Gold Standard of Care for Your Child. We'll talk about how that process works. There is, obviously, as we've touched on already, some self-analysis of what your own needs are as a parent. We'll get into that and much more when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange with Tammy Gold, Secrets of the Nanny Whisperer, and your phone calls and emails. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 30. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Tammy Gold, a licensed therapist and parenting coach, and now an author. Her book is Secrets of the Nanny Whisperer, A Practical Guide for Finding and Achieving the Gold Standard of Care for Your Child. We'll discuss the process ahead of finding a person to share the parenting load with you and the process of self-assessment involved there as well. Join us on the Exchange if you'd like at 800-838-3760 with questions or comments. Emails are welcome as well at jx@jeffnet.org. Tammy, you stress a constancy of care. It seems self-explanatory, but how do you get there, particularly as you pointed out a moment ago, when you're fairly new as a parent yourself?
So constancy of care is something I noticed when I was observing these families, and I realized that some kids had no reaction when mom or dad left the door, and some other kids, you know, went bananas. They fell apart. And so constancy of care is a term that I created to say this is really what the end result of good child care is. And what it means is that the child feels no drop in the level of love, safety, security when mom and dad go away and the new child care provider, whether it's a daycare center or a nanny, comes into place. And they need that, you know, based on cognitive studies and psychological studies, they need to feel that safety and that security in order to grow and have emotional health. So the key was to either find places that could mimic the style of parents so that the child felt safe, or to teach these centers or individuals how to do their own way to make sure that they were meeting the child's developmental and emotional needs.
And you have some numbers in here on brain development by age, which makes you realize, wow, caregivers are truly influential because they're there when the kid's brain is really forming a lot of connections.
Absolutely. And it's really, the studies are coming out more and more. Every day there's a new study. And to me, it's fascinating. We put so little focus on nannies, babysitters, daycare workers, preschool teachers, yet those are the people that, without question, have the biggest impact on brain growth. Even less than college professors, I would say, because if you look at it chemically, there's when the most change in the brain is occurring. So I'm hoping, you know, with the book and with the new studies coming out, to shed some light on the effect that these caregivers have and how crucial it is to really take the time to figure out what's the best match so that your child's needs are being met.
Now, finding that match, as you point out, is not just a matter of, well, this feels right. You don't want people to go by their gut. I guess if you did, you wouldn't have written this book.
Right. You don't want to go by your gut because you don't want to learn. You don't want to choose first and learn second, because that's when problems occur. You can have stress in the relationship, and that causes problems with children. You can have high caregiver turnover, which causes problems with children. By learning later, it's going to hurt the children. So by learning first what your needs are, I term them as your musts. Prior to this, a lot of people focus on the physical aspect of child care. You know, child care is something to cover the hours and days that I am not here. But what I'm trying to do is really figure out the emotional piece, and I term them your musts, what you need for your job. You need your physical, your days, your hours, what you can pay, but you also need your emotional. Can this caregiver care for your child appropriately, and can they match your needs as a parent? In the book, I talk about three different types of nannies, but it doesn't have to be, you know, just nannies. You have to figure out if this child care center, this daycare center, or this shared nanny exchange, is this meeting your needs as a parent? Because if parent and child are both needs are being met, that's when the family is the healthiest. And it's just simply having parents ask themselves a set of questions and really thinking about outlining these musts, and then it becomes really easy to base the whole process on those questions and those being the basic necessities for the job.
Tammy Gold, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Secrets of the Nanny Whisperer. Tammy, you're pretty tough in the book on existing ideas for how to pick a nanny. What are some of the issues you see?
You know, I never like to say parents make mistakes because we're not told what to do, so we go by our gut. But a lot of a problem with the way we do it today is we're focusing on the physical, and, you know, there are a lot of caregivers that are doing wonderful jobs physically caring for children, keeping them safe, keeping them warm, keeping them fed, but they're neglecting the emotional piece. And I call it in the book benign neglect, because the child looks safe and happy, but these caregivers, if they're on their phone all day, if they're watching TV all day, if they're really not tuned in to the child emotionally, they're causing that brain growth not to happen, literally not to happen, because there's no interaction occurring between caregiver and child, and they're not allowing those emotional attachments to form. And I'm really tough on those caregivers because I've seen them in all types of child care, from in-home to center, and I really want to kind of rid them in the world of child care and help people really identify the people that can do both, who can do the physical and emotional, as more and more people realize how much a smiling face is as important as someone's physical capabilities. I hope it will weed out people that have been kind of resting their laurels on being great in the physical sense. And a lot of parents, sadly, that I've seen have done that. There are some people that I wouldn't let watch a fish caring for children, people with gruff attitudes or what we call flat affect in psychology, someone who doesn't smile, someone who's not vivacious and warm. These are key to having safety and love and emotional nurturing for your children. And my hope is that we'll really start focusing on that.
It seems like when you hear people talk about nannies, it's stuff like, wow, she could change a diaper in 15 seconds flat. But there is a lot more to it than that, as you point out. And in fact, you probably saw that video that went viral recently. It was the experiment where the mother turned away from the child and then just showed the flat affect. And it drove the kid nuts.
Bananas.
Yeah.
Right? Bananas. And it happens a lot, and I've seen it because I've been privy to a lot of stories and a lot of research and a lot of observation as I watched in parks and preschools, and I've seen it countless times. Of course, there are wonderful nannies out there, but I've seen nannies who drop children off of preschool, kind of tugging them out of the car, yelling at them, no smile on their face. And this is so confusing to the children because they don't know, what have I done wrong? This is not a job where you can come and bring your stuff outside into this job every day. Of course, everyone can have a bad day here or there, but prolonged negative attitude in this job is dangerous. If you want to be unhappy, you can go to a supermarket or a bank or a restaurant or, you know, maybe a corporate career where you don't interact with a lot of people, but you cannot have a negative or even a neutral, flat attitude when you're working with children.
Let's take a call. Wolfgang in Sunny Valley has been waiting a bit. Wolfgang, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Tammy Gold, the Nanny Whisperer.
Good morning, JX Whisperer and Nanny Whisperer. What strikes me is, it's a two-parter. This whole thing is a little like, what color do I want my BMW? Okay. What I'm trying to say is that most people not only don't have the choice or not in a situation where they could even look for a nanny. In fact, I think that most of the deficiencies, most of the quote mistakes that you don't want to say, happen as standard procedure in most families of most income levels, but most dramatically, of course, in families or living situations where there is no money, where there is no skill, where there is no education, where there is just barely hanging on by whatever means or totally unconscious. I mean, I've seen it in so many ways. And you mentioned a supermarket. Sometimes it feels that if a child were stuck in a supermarket shopping cart, it would get more attention and more interaction than at home.
Just because people would come up and coo to the child?
Huh?
Just because people would come up and say hello to the child and coo?
Yeah, right. I mean, how can we use what your experiences and your know-how to bring it to the people to the 99%, let's face it.
All right, so the bigger issue is that most people can't afford nannies?
Right, and that's a great, it's a great comment, but the statistics are really changing. 75% of moms are working, and more nannies they're not for the rich and famous as people used to have. They're being used readily more and more every day in combination with daycare in a nanny or preschool in a nanny or nanny shares, and they are becoming more common because so many mothers are having to go to work to support the family these days. And of course, my wish is to bring awareness to all of parenting, because my job first and foremost is a therapist and a parenting expert, to show all people how to care well. There is so much parenting in the book. People have called me and emailed me because I teach what children need at each developmental stage, what can go wrong if you don't do that, and what you need to look for in someone else and also do in yourself to help your children emotionally. So this particular book is, again, for nannies because I saw it a lot with my clientele, and because of the rise of working mothers and their rise in the number of nannies, I wrote it for this. But a lot of my lectures and pro bono work and writing appeals to all parents to learn how to do the basic fundamentals of caregiving, because that is what I learned in my very first job when I was working with at-risk families in a school, teaching basic caregiving to parents that didn't have that themselves and who were under these very stressful situations.
Tammy Gold, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, therapist and parenting coach and author now of Secrets of the Nanny Whisperer, a practical guide for finding and achieving the gold standard of care for your child. You can join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 throughout our listening area, 800-838-3760, or by email jx@jeffnet.org. So what is the going rate? We mentioned we were going to talk about nuts and bolts, but dollars and cents as well. And so what are people going to spend on a nanny?
Well, I'll speak in averages because every area of the country is very different. But I think that I would say between $12 and $15 would be the average. Some areas and some nannies command much higher, some command much lower. But most people do weekly rates. So for an in-home provider, I believe the weekly rate is $500 a week. And for an out-of-home provider, it's usually higher because they're not getting the room and board. And, you know, that aspect of the business, I tell people to refer to the INA, the International Nanny Association, and the payroll specialty places like Homework Solutions, because they can really give you the best information for your area, for your market, and for your needs. And it is expensive, and more people are doing nanny shares. They're having a couple families share with one nanny or doing this combination of daycare, which may end at 5, and then the nanny for the 2 hours until mom gets home. Or people are doing nanny for the first year when that one-to-one interaction is really critical, and then, you know, scaling back a bit and putting into daycare. You know, my hope is that the government will help subsidize more child care benefits and tax credits for families, because it is a shame that so many parents are really struggling, want in-home care, but just can't afford it. So my hope is that in time that will improve.
So a time out here for a question about certifications and qualifications. There is no central nanny registry, or is there?
There is the International Nanny Association, which helps give teaching courses and certificates of that nature, but there is no U.S. governing body, nothing government anointed, where someone has to do a certain amount of testing or get some sort of skill test or physical test, and that's very concerning. Anybody can advertise themselves as a nanny in America, and that is, you know, that's a big concern I had as a therapist, and I wanted to arm parents with the tools to weed out the people that aren't right, because people apply for jobs. They may lie, they may not be truthful, or they may have no skills whatsoever to do nannying, but maybe they didn't work in their other professional career and they want to pick up something else. So because there's nobody watching over, a lot of problems can occur.
So as you point out, this is a fairly rigorous process described in Secrets of the Nanny Whisperer. Tammy Gold, right. Again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. A couple things that parents talk about not wanting their kids emulating in nannies. And in this realm, what's important and what's not?
You know, people worry about them sometimes with language speech. They said, you know, I'm worried that they'll speak like the nanny, you know, and they worry that they'll have a thick accent one day. And I don't think that's going to occur. I think that if your nanny is a good nanny, your nanny is a role model, a teacher, a nurse, all these things wrapped into one. And if they're good, they have another adult loving them. And if they bring positive aspects to that child's life and they emulate those aspects, that's a good thing. I've really not heard in, you know, my experience and, you know, my hundreds of people research of a child emulating a nanny in a bad way. But the process helps parents learn to be vocal. If there's something that's strongly important to you, you don't want to talk the nanny to talk about religion. You don't want the nanny to bring unhealthy foods. You don't want the nanny to use certain terminology. Just tell them that and train them like you would in any other job so that the nanny knows clearly when they begin, you know, normally I would speak about my religion because I'm so proud of it and I love it and it's a part of my daily life, but I know in this job I can't. So with the techniques of the screening process and then part two, the training and communication process, it teaches parents how to really perfect and kind of really tailor make the nanny for taking the good and leaving out what they believe is not so good so that the child wouldn't emulate that something they believe would be unhealthy.
You already talked about attachment theory a bit. This is a period in lives and their lives when kids are really getting attached to people. They're forming their first relationships, really. So how does a parent deal with the concern that, oh, my God, my kid loves my nanny more than me?
Oh, and I talk about that in the book, a whole chapter about it, because that was a biggie as a therapist. I did a lot of mediation between mothers and and the issues they felt. They felt guilty leaving, or they felt guilty that someone else is loving their child. And, you know, what I go back to is that the father of attachment theory is John Bowlby. In one of his books, he says, parenting is exhausting, and to do it right, to be really selfless and devoted, it cannot be done by one person. You need other people to help you. And if these are a group of stable, loving people, this is only going to benefit your child. So I try to tell parents to don't look at it as a defensive or a negative. See the positive aspects of being able to leave the home and have your child feel secure and happy, and know that nobody's going to replace a parent. You know, there is nothing stronger than a parent's love. And a nanny who's doing their job well is only fostering more emotional health and growth in your child that will better them down the road. And sometimes, you know, they may want to play with that nanny or may choose to hang out with the nanny, but that's the nanny's professional craft. They're, you know, paid to play and be wonderful with children. So sometimes they're going to have the advantage, but you shouldn't worry about it.
All right. Just good to have a universe of people who are loving people around your child. Secrets of the Nanny Whisperer is the book. Tammy Gold is the author. We'll take a short break and come back and talk more with Tammy, and take your phone calls and emails if you'd like to join us. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Tammy Gold and you in a minute 30. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Tammy Gold, a licensed therapist and parenting coach, now an author. She has taken her persona as the Nanny Whisperer into the pages of a book called Secrets of the Nanny Whisperer, a practical guide for finding and achieving the gold standard of care for your child. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about how to find people who are good with your kids. And obviously, it takes some money, too. We've been talking about that as well. Join us at 800-838-3760 throughout the listening area, 800-838-3760, or by email jx@jeffnet.org. Jorge and Roosh emails to back up what Wolfgang called in before. He says, Wolfgang is spot on. My stepson and daughter-in-law spend in excess of $50,000 per year on three kids in daycare. It's great care in a nice situation, but the cost excludes most workers from this quality of care. Which I think is not surprising. We're hearing a fair number of people talking about this. It costs a lot to get quality care for your kids.
And I agree. And again, you know, this book is just about nannies. The first book I wrote was Child Care 101, and it included all types of child care. But the pieces of this book can be used with daycare centers. This is not saying, you know, only wealthy people can get good care. They can take pieces of this practice and use it for interviewing daycare centers, reference checking daycare centers, doing trials at daycare centers, how to communicate clearly, which is the second half of the book. I've had, you know, two people last week alone said, I used your book to help me with my daycare center because I wasn't sure how to tell them what my needs were without seeming too pushy or trying to break their usual pattern. This, if anything else, this book teaches parents how to advocate for their children's needs in child care situations. And sadly, one in four children in America is looked after by someone other than a parent. So this is just a way of life now. And this book and, you know, just the tenets of good caregiving can be used for all types of child care by really teaching parents how to interview, ask the right questions, assess your needs, and find the best match. And if that match is a in-home daycare center as opposed to a commercial daycare center, that may be. And that's what I hope people take from the book, to learn that, wow, you know, I was thinking I would use the daycare center two blocks from my work, but after reading the book and asking the questions, I realized the one that was closer to our home, run by a nice old lady down the street, is really better match for our infant's developmental needs. These are universal caregiving premise, and the gold standard ideal is universal for child care, not just for nannies.
And Tammy, you've touched on it a couple times now, but I want to explore it a little in greater depth here. We're talking about before you actually start looking for the person, you have to look into yourselves, too, and figure out what it is you want.
Absolutely. And those assessment tools are for anybody using, from an au pair to a daycare center to a sitter. What do you want? What kind of environment do you want? Say we're talking about a daycare. Do you want a big, bustling commercial daycare center, or do you want a quiet in-home daycare provider? Do you want a lot of children with mixed ages, or do you prefer ones that's broken up between having the infant room, the toddler room, the preschool room? And as a parent, do you want one that has a very strict policy because you guys are strict and you like things organized, or do you want someone that has a little bit more looser emotional policy that has maybe cameras in all of the rooms? You need to figure out your needs even when looking at daycare centers. You have to ask the right questions, and those questions are not just how the daycare works for other families. You need to ask the questions to make sure the daycare center works for your family. You know, the physical needs of running late for work, how would you handle this? To the emotional needs, my child may have a lot of tantrums. How are you going to handle that? And this is really to tell parents worldwide, take control of the process, ask the questions that matter to you, and feel comfortable advocating for your child's needs. Even if they're in a daycare center, they're still your child. And if there are certain things you need to feel comfortable, ask them and work with them so that you can come to a comfortable place where you feel that the child is getting taken care of.
As I look at the level of rigorousness of the process, I wonder at what point parents should begin writing down their ideas about what their expectations for parenting are, because it seems like if you're 2 months into a child and you're still sort of dealing with sleepless nights and spit up on your clothes and stuff, that maybe that's not the best time to be trying to figure out your needs, assessing your needs.
Right. I definitely tell parents, if they can, to, you know, start the process early. You want to give yourself as much time, because when people are stressed and under pressure, they don't think as clearly. And what I tell parents, I really kind of make it easy in the book, because I talk through helping them understand their parental needs, and then I give them a quick guide of developmentally what their children need. They don't have to figure it out. I break it up by Erickson's famed psychosocial stages of development, and I say if your child is an infant, this is what they need, and this is what to look for, and this is what could happen if you don't have that. And I go through toddler, preschool, school-age, teen. So you don't have to really even know your child's needs in regards to knowing them well, because you may only have them for 4 weeks. But if you know the general concept of the developmental stage they are in, and again, it's in the book, you can begin to flesh out, oh, okay, so I understand that they're going to need someone who's going to hold them, someone who's going to respond to them, rock them. If they're a toddler, they're going to need someone who can be very creative and play with them, but also teach them how to be independent. So it's not about knowing your child to the T as much as it's about knowing the developmental age that most of us parents just don't know, because no one taught us. There's no parenting book.
Which raises the question, when you get into talking about parenting cultural backgrounds, I mean, what if you as a parent, because your own parenting might have been kind of crappy, what you got from your own parents, if you don't recognize good parenting?
If you don't recognize good parenting, it's very hard to know what to look for. So that's why you turn to the experts. You look at, you try to get information you can, like I use in the book, these theories of development are not mine. They're, you know, famed psychologists. And you try to see, what did you feel worked in your childhood? What are things that make you happy? What are things that made you unhappy? And you try to have a reflective experience. As a therapist, I work with parents all the time, and typically they either do what their parents did because it worked, they do the opposite because it didn't work, or they try to do a little of both. So it's really about taking the time to say, I need to have a reflective process here. When I'm working with new parents, I tell them, you need to figure out, you know, your parental plan, which is who's going to do what as a parent. Are you going to share the responsibility? Is one going to take the main responsibility? And then you have to figure out your parental philosophy. What do you want for your children? What way do you want to care for them? And that's when you think about your background and what worked and what didn't work. And if you have a partner, you merge the backgrounds and come up with what you hope will be the best. And then you try to read about it. And when you execute it, you see if it works.
Another question here from Sandy in Mount Shasta. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Tammy Gold, the author of Secrets of the Nanny Whisperer.
Yeah, hi, Jeff. Hi, Tammy. Tammy, I want to go back to that. Could you repeat what you said about John Bowlby said?
Which piece?
About attachment parenting?
Yeah, it was about parenting being the toughest job. It would be a very tough job, and it shouldn't be done alone.
It's a great quote, and I'm going to just surmise it. But what he does is try to take away the guilt of having other people around. He really believes in intensive parenting, selfless, loving, devoted caregivers. And what he says, if the job is to be done well, the caregiver is to not be exhausted and have a group of other stable caregivers to help them out. And, again, that's not my theory. That is, a famed person who studied attachments for years and years and years. And a lot of parents do have that mentality of, I will give my all. I know as a mother myself I do it. You want to do everything on your own.
Right.
But what I tell moms in my lectures and parents when I work with them, it's impossible to give yourself at 100% to your children 100%
Absolutely.
Of the time. And
Absolutely.
They will be better off if you spend less quality time with them than they would if you were tired or exhausted or snappy. So if you need to go downstairs and run on the treadmill, but then you cuddle with them for 20 minutes and read them a story, they're going to be better off than if you were with them the whole time, but you're snappy or you're tired or you're so exhausted that you can't talk. And that's modern parenthood is exhausting. The kids have a million activities, and it's really tiring for parents, especially parents that are working or stay-at-home parents that are juggling the activities of several different children. We need to give that quality one-to-one time, but it doesn't need to be one-to-one all the time. I tell parents, like, you're a cup. You're giving out all the time, and you're an empty cup. You need to fill yourself up so you, in turn, can be a better caregiver to your child.
Was there a follow-up thought there, Sandy?
Yes. I work with early childhood. I'm studying early childhood development and education, and I've been working for a couple of years. I've worked with kids all my life, but I focused in on preschoolers and toddlers in the last couple of years because with all this information coming out of neuroscience, and attachment theory research, which is just in voluminous amounts that have confirmed Bowlby's entire theory over and over and over again, the importance of it. What I see is that our society, unless you're in the 1% or close to it, does not support parenting at all.
Right.
I worked for a while in a very high-end private school, preschool. Cost about $2,200 a month to have a child in that school. And there were families there that had four children in that school. So you know those people are making serious money. And sometimes the kids were there 8 or 10 hours before their parents came to pick them up. And so many times in the late afternoon, I would look across the room. I was in the child aftercare program, and at that point of the day, kids have been there all day. They're bouncing off the walls. I mean, this was a really good school, too. There was no expense spared to create a great environment for little ones. But I would see looks on kids, and, maybe just purely a figment of my imagination, but sometimes in the late afternoon, I would see a look on a little one's face that appeared to me, it was sort of like maybe they were just, it was starting to dawn on them, if I'm as important to mommy and daddy as they say I am, why am I here?
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right.
There's a great book by Penelope Leach called Child Care. affecting child care today. And you are right. There are other countries that do much more to help parents have more support, to have better daycare programs. Now, certainly in preschool, a lot of children benefit. Even better than, you know, if there's a four-year-old home with mom all day, mom's going to have to do a lot to keep them stimulated and happy. And preschools can be wonderful, wonderful things. But there is, unfortunately, a shift in the wrong focus in America right now that we need to earn so much just to get by. We're away from our children a lot. We're having other people take care of them, which taxes us even further, and there's not any government support. And in other countries, they have wonderful, unbelievable child care programs. They have support where people go and help the postpartum mother. And, you know, Bowlby talks about that in his book, A Secure Base, that, you know, when you focus on economy and the devotion of just making money, you're really not having, you know, the priorities in the right place. And I definitely think there has to be, with more of these studies coming out, the government getting involved to help parents handle this child care dilemma. Either make it more affordable that mothers can stay home if they choose, or make child care more affordable that children can truly get high, high, high level of cares, not just having daycare workers that are paid tremendously low wages with no benefits, so nobody wants to take the job. It's really it's a sad state, and I hope it improves.
You know, a big issue here for a lot of parents, and it's a variation of what I asked before, but that the nanny may spend more waking hours with the child, but this is still an employee-employer relationship. So how keep this clear for the child?
Yes, and this is true that they spend. I've had many different situations where the nanny spends 70 hours with the child. There are many nannies that spend more time. And you just explain to the children as they get older that, you know, teachers will come and go, and this is a special person who loves you. And, you know, when they leave, you explain that there's family and non-family, but you do it in a calm conversation when they're old enough to really understand it.
Lots of good insights in the book, Secrets of the Nanny Whisperer, A Practical Guide for Finding and Achieving the Gold Standard of Care for Your Child. Play on words. Tammy Gold is the author. She's been our guest. Tammy, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. Take care.